Likutei Sicha is Parshas Vayishlach Chelek Yud, the second Sicha. It's actually the first Sicha that's labeled only Vayishlach, because the first Sicha of Vayishlach is Vayishlach and Yutes Kislev. At any rate, in the book of Chelek Yud, it's page 109. I'm going to start actually with some background. And this is going to pull on footnote number 19. It's a long footnote, but it gives some context there. So we're going to be talking in the parsha where Yaakov has come to meet Esav, and the Torah says that Esav took his wives and all of his belongings, and he went to the land, the land which he would decide to live in. He went to the land of Seir. And the Pasuk explains, because they had a lot of possessions, and they weren't able, Yaakov and Esav, after Yaakov could come back with a heavy amount of possessions and sheep and all kinds of wealth, the land wasn't able to, their ancestral land, the land where they had been living, where Yitzchak lived, the land of Canaan, was not able to hold them because of all their miknehem. Okay? We'll soon decide what miknehem is. Miknehem, possessions, cattle, and so on. So, this comes in later on in the footnotes of the Rebbe, but I want to point out, at the very beginning of the parsha of Vayishlach, it says that Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, Yaakov sent messengers, when he's coming back from Lavan, coming back to his home, he sent messengers to Esav Achiv, to his brother Esav, who was in the land of Seir, in the field of Edom. Okay, so that means Esav is not in Canaan, according when Yaakov is coming back to Israel. In the psukim that we're going to be dealing with, which is way towards the end of the portion of Vayishlach, that's after they've met, after that meeting and so on. Now it says that Yaakov is settled back in the land of Canaan, in his father's land. And then it says, the pasuk that we're going to be talking about, that Esav took his family and went to Eretz, which there actually says he went to settle wherever he would find. And we find that, where did he settle? By Yeshev Esav. Esav settled in Har Seir, in the mountain of Seir. And Esav, that's Edom. In other words, he settled somewhere else than where he was when Yaakov came back to Israel. Yet, how does that reconcile with the fact that when Yaakov was on his way back to Israel, he wanted to create a dialogue with Esav? It says that he sent the malachim, he sent the messengers, the angels, to his brother Esav. Where was Esav already in Eretz Seir Sedei Edom? So, if he's already living there, why later on do we find that because the land was not able to bear them, they had to split up, and Esav chose to go to Edom? That's where he was in the first place. So the Rebbe brings in Ha'ara, in footnote 19, that the Mefarshim point out, Ramban and so on, and others, that Esav had gone to the land of Seir. That's where he had gone, perhaps with his 400 men. That's where, but his family and his main estate was still in the land of Canaan. And that's why when Yaakov was looking to engage Esav individually, he sent to where Esav was hanging out. Perhaps you could say it was like his workplace or his, but that's where he sent him, to the land of Seir. Then, once Yaakov has had that encounter with him, Esav comes back to his place where he lives and his estate is, his possessions are, and that's in his father's land, in the land of Canaan. Now, when they split up, Esav leaves and he creates a permanent with all of his family, with all of today we would probably call that primary dwelling. He moves his primary dwelling with everything that he has to the land of Seir. Now, why doesn't Rashi explain any of this? So the Rebbe says, well, it's simple, because when it says that Esav went back to Seir, it says in the pasuk that Esav went back on his path to Seir. In other words, which means to say, it wasn't that was his primary dwelling, but it was definitely his habitual route. This was a path that he was accustomed to, which would mean that again, if the land of Seir is identified as being Sedei Edom, the field of Edom, we know that Esav and field go together. It says that Esav was Ishir Dei Atzair, he was a man of hunting, Ishsada, a man of the field. So this was obviously a place that lent itself to Esav's behavior pattern, Seir, and so therefore he was frequent on that path. That was some place where he was hanging out, right? But this was not his primary residence with his family and so on. When Yaakov moved to Canaan, then there wasn't enough room for the two of them. Then he moved to Seir. Okay? The Ramban also... Okay, so this is something I think that's, at least was for me, was important until I discovered it towards the middle of the Sikh and the footnote, it was bothering me. So I'm giving that as a context there. Okay. So now Yaakov is in Israel and Esav is there. And the Pasuk tells us that the land wasn't able to hold both of them, so Esav left. So now we're going into the actual Sikha. So the Rebbe comments, the Rashi, in his interpretation of these words, he chooses to take the words, V'lo yachla eretz megureyem, that the land of their living was not able to bear. And what does Rashi explain? On those words, "Lo yochle eretz megureyem," the land where they were living was not able to hold them. Rashi says, actually, Rashi doesn't quote the actual verse from the pasuk. Let me just give it to you. Because their possessions were a lot from being able to sit together, and the land of where they were living was not able to losseis eislam. Losseis eislam means to carry them, mipnei mikneh, because of their mikneh. Rashi brings in the title of the Rashi just the words, the land of their living was not able. And he explains, it was not able, lahaspik, it couldn't provide, what couldn't it do? It couldn't provide enough grazing land for the cattle that they had. And the Medrash Agada says that, mipnei Yaakov achiv, why did he have to move? Because of Yaakov, his brother. And what is the Medrash Agada says? We're going to deal with it in chapter 2 of the Sikha, but so we'll deal with it there. But let's first think about why Rashi has to comment here at all. Says, ask the Rebbe. Now, question number one. If Rashi wants to explain what does it mean that the land couldn't hold them because of their mikneh, because there's not enough grazing land, so he should have quoted that entire quote from the Pasuk, and not just the quote that the land couldn't, Lo yachla eretz megureyhem, the land they were living wasn't able. It doesn't quote from the Pasuk, it wasn't able to hold them because of their mikneh. Number two, what's Rashi achieving or telling us or teaching us that we wouldn't know? I mean, Rashi, the Pasuk says, the land they were living was not able to hold them because of their mikneh, because of their cattle. That's simple. Especially in Parshas Lech Lecha, we already had a similar story with Loit, that Loit had cattle and Avraham had cattle, and the Pasuk says that the land wasn't able to hold them together, and Rashi there explains there wasn't enough grazing land. Now Rashi explains it again. We already know when land can't hold somebody, it means because there's not enough grazing land for the cattle. That's question number two. Question number three, why does Rashi change the language here? The Pasuk says it couldn't hold, the land couldn't hold them because of their mikneh. Mikneh means cattle. Rashi says behemoth. He translates, so to speak, the word mikneh. Now, Rashi, it's not the first time that the word mikneh pops up in the Torah. We know before that Rashi didn't explain anything on the word mikneh. We understood it means cattle. More than that, Rashi himself used the words mikneh when he explains in Parshas Lech Lecha the story of Loit, that there wasn't enough room for Loit and Avraham. So then Rashi says, oh, there wasn't enough mireh, there wasn't enough grazing land, and in Rashi he uses the word lemiknehem for their mikneh. In other words, it's such a simple word that Rashi uses it to speak to the five-year-old. So why here does the word mikneh require to be re-articulated as behemoth? As if we wouldn't know that mikneh refers to cattle, to their animal? That's the third question. Fourth question is, why does Rashi have to bring another interpretation from a medrash? What's the medrash Rashi brings? We're soon going to say what the medrash is. More than that, when we say about Loit and Avraham, that Avraham says we can't be together, when we say the land wasn't enough for them, Rashi doesn't look for any other interpretations. The land not being enough is enough, is an explanation. You need a lot of land to graze your cattle. There's not enough, too much cattle, not enough land, so you gotta move. Okay. So then, what is the second period? Chapter, Oratu. Sif base, it's the second paragraph. Rashi continues. And then he brings another medrash. So Rashi said the land wasn't big enough because there wasn't enough grazing land. Okay. Now he brings a medrash. What is the medrash Agada? The Agadic medrash is, Mipnei Yankiv Achiv, that he says he had to move because of Yaakov, his brother, says Rashi, the medrash says, because of the document of responsibility, the shtar chayiv, the debt that living in Israel brings with it. What debt? Because it says, when Avraham Avinu was promised by God that the land will be given to his children, it says, ki ger yi ezaracho beretz leilahem, that your children will be strangers in a land that's not them. He said, getting the land of Israel is also connected with paying the debt of being in exile for hundreds of years. He says, I don't want the land, and I don't want to pay the bill of the hundreds of years of exile. I'll move. Continues Rashi from the Medrash, and he says, and also, Umipnei habusha shemacha b'chayrasi, Esav also moved because of the humiliation that he had sold his birthright. So now Yaakov was the bechayr, was the firstborn in terms of rights, and Esav had sold it. It was humiliating. He did it when he was 13 years old, and now he had given away something so valuable for a soup of lentils. So he chose to move. So we have to understand. First of all, we wanted to understand why Rashi brings a second. Why does Rashi need to add this whole thing? We understand there's not enough grazing land, so Esav moves. What's not to be understood? So the Rebbe brings in a footnote. The Gurari says that, well, why does he move to a different land? Why doesn't he just move to a different locale? So in order to explain why he doesn't just move to a different locale, Rashi says we need to understand why he moved to another land. He says, well, because there's a debt that needs to be paid here. And Esav said, I don't want the land of Israel. I don't want to be in exile for hundreds of years. But still, in all the Rebbe says, that doesn't really explain for our purposes, because the Rashi doesn't just stop about the debt. Rashi also brings that second aspect of the busha, about for the humiliation that Esav had for selling his firstborn. His firstbornness he left. Why would we need that? That doesn't help understand why he left the land totally. He could have just left not to be in proximity of Yaakov. Also, the Rebbe here, remember I mentioned that Ramban says that really where was Esav already had some kind of a domicile in Edom, right? His family was all in Eretz Yisrael still, but he was already working in the land of Seir. So, interesting, the Rebbe says, we could understand why he went to Seir in particular. Because the Ramban had said, when Yaakov sent messengers to Esav in the land of Seir, what was he doing there? The Ramban had there suggested that the south, Seir is to the south of Eretz Yisrael. And we know that Yitzchak was dwelling in the south of Eretz Yisrael. So Esav took a place outside his land, outside the land of Israel, where he went to work. But even so, he made sure to try and stay closer to his father, who was at the south of Eretz Yisrael. So they were bordering each other. So the Rebbe says that this would explain why where Esav moves. Now when he moves to the land of Seir, because it's not so far from his father's land. But again, this doesn't explain and answer the question the Rebbe is asking. Why do we need the second interpretation? Even if we want to use a second interpretation to explain why he left the land, because he didn't want to pay the debt of the exile, what does the medrash have to do with it? The fact that there was humiliation involved. So now the Rebbe continues. That another question is, it doesn't say that some say he left because of humiliation. It seems to be a continuation. It's on the one hand, from when the way we read it simply, it seems to me there's a new reason. One reason is he didn't want to be in exile for hundreds of years. The other reason is that he's humiliated because he sold his birthright, so he leaves. So why does Rashi seem to merge the two? These are two separate reasons. Rashi doesn't teach them as two separate reasons. There's no v'yeshem. Some say he left because of humiliation. No, it just flows on for the exile and for humiliation. Third question about this is, since Rashi obviously doesn't suffice with one interpretation of this saga, So why does he... It obviously means that we need both reasons to explain why Esav left the land. Nonetheless, he left the land totally, either because he didn't want to be in exile to pay the debt, or because of humiliation. Why does the humiliation come second? Always the interpretation that comes first means Rashi thinks that's the simpler way to go. Why is that the simpler way to explain why he left the land over the other aspect of the humiliation that he felt being in the same land with Yaakov because he had sold the birthright? Question number four. Well, if we say that he left because he didn't want to pay the debt of having to be in exile for hundreds of years, why does he wait till Yaakov comes and settles the land? Already, the payment of the debt started. We know that the 400 years are calculated from the birth of Yitzchak. So in other words, this whole thing, this whole historical concept is already unfolding. So why doesn't Esav already, so to speak, flee or remove himself from the land of Canaan so as not to be part of this process of needing to be in exile? Why doesn't he do it right away? Why does he wait for Yaakov to come back to Haran? That's kind of sparks his decision to move. Next question is that before explaining that he left because he didn't want to pay the debt of being in exile for hundreds of years, Rashi first requotes words from a previous pasuk. The pasuk before says he left the land from before. He went to another land from before his brother Yaakov. That was in the last words of the previous pasuk. Rashi requotes these words because of Yaakov, his brother. And he explains that because of Yaakov, his brother, because he said, I don't want to pay the debt of the exile or because of humiliation. Why does he once again quote those words from the previous pasuk? Why do we need to bring that in again? More than that, on the contrary, it seems that those words he left because of Yaakov seems to be the exact opposite of what Rashi's trying to say. Rashi is saying he left because of the covenant with Avraham, right? And because Avraham was promised that his children will be given the land of Canaan, but they'll also have to be in exile for hundreds of years. So that's why he left. Rashi says he left. Rashi rebrings the words from last pasuk. He says he left because of Yaakov. He says because of the debt of that comes along with the ownership of the land, that you have to be in exile for hundreds of years. So it's not because of Yaakov. So why rebring the words of Yaakov? Say it's because of Yaakov, and then go and say it's because of a promise to Avraham. So these things need to be explained. The Rebbe is going to go now and explain, as the Rebbe always does, revolutionize the way we look at this psukim, what Rashi is trying to do. The explanation is like this. It says, the pasuk says that Esav took everything he had. The pasuk says, Vayikach Esav took. Second, let me read it from the pasuk itself. Yikach Esav took his wives, his daughters, his sons, his daughters, all of the souls of his house, and all of his mikne, and all of his behemoths, and all the things kinyone, all the things he had purchased, all his possessions which he had got in the land of Canaan, all of his anything he had amassed since he was born in the land of Canaan till now. He went to the land from before Yaakov, his brother. He moved. Later we see he moved to Seir. So, says the Rebbe, what we have to say, that when the Pasuk says that the land that they were living in was not able to hold them because of their mikne, so it's, which explains that, right, that as the pasuk continues, because their possessions were many from being able to sit together. And then it says, and the land was not able to hold them because of their mikneh. So it's not just going on cattle. The pasuk has enunciated all the vast aspect of things that he has. Right? So it's not just, in Parshas Lech Lecha, we talk about sheep. And there's not enough grazing land. Here there seems to be a description of everything that Esav had put together, all of his possessions. And it says that the land wasn't able to hold them. In other words, simply there wasn't enough for all their possessions, not just cattle. It's not an expansive land. It starts becoming stifling. It starts becoming crowded. So that would seem to be the simple thing, that it's not just about grazing land, it's just in general about being crowded, because they had so many possessions. However, the problem with learning that way, and if you learn that way, Rashi has no need to explain anything. You know, he had a vast estate, and Yaakov came back with his stuff. Hey, sorry, no room for two. But the problem with that is, why does Esav move? Esav was living in Canaan, like we said, that was his main domicile. That was where his wives were, all his possessions were. He went to work in Seir, but he was living in Canaan. Now Yaakov's the new kid on the block, so to speak. He comes back, and all of a sudden Esav is moving. Esav is moving. Why is Esav the guy moving? More than that, we don't find that Yaakov had to threaten or try or make any efforts to have Esav live the land. It just says the land couldn't hold them both, and Esav left. It's puzzling. Why did Esav leave before Yaakov? Yaakov is the guy that just came in order to answer this. Rashi brings the words v'lo yachla eretz megureihem. So he quotes the words, the land that they had lived in was not able. He says, what wasn't it able to do? It wasn't able to provide enough grazing land. In other words, hang on. Before we say it wasn't able to handle all their possessions, don't even go to the word possessions. The land wasn't able. Rashi right away says, you know what it wasn't able to do? It wasn't able to provide grazing land. Right? To their behemoths. Let me say it clearly. It's not because the word mikne could also be related to acquisitions. You could buy things with money. It could mean possessions technically. So Rashi specifies, no, the land, in other words, the cattle, we're talking here grazing. Grazing land for cattle. Behemoths. If the issue was not enough grazing land for animals, so let's be pragmatic here. Who has more cattle? Who's more into their grazing land? We know in the last pasuk, in the last parsha, Parsha Vayetze, there's a long discussion about the fortune that Yaakov amasses, particularly in the field of sheep, right? And we know that he had a blessing. Vayifreitzoish, the man became exceedingly wealthy. He had many sheep. The pasuk says, Tzoyin Rabbis, many sheep. And Rashi explained there that the sheep multiplied in a supernatural way, more than other sheep. Esav was a hunter. He did stuff in the field. Ish sodeh, all the stuff of field. But he wasn't, per se, a cattleman, a grazer, a shepherd. So, when Yaakov came to Eretz Canaan, now the issue becomes grazing land. So now when we see there's not enough grazing land, so, in this aspect, now we understand why Yaakov takes precedent to Esav, right? The land's not able to hold both of them, and the issue is grazing land. In grazing land, Yaakov is more in need. Yaakov, his practical need is grazing land, and so therefore, Esav is the one to move. Do you buy that? I don't mean you buy the Rebbe's explanation. I'm saying, what the Rebbe... Okay, do you buy that in terms of Esav? Would Esav leave? Because it seems that if we're talking about who has to leave, the one more suited to staying here because he needs grazing land and there's not enough grazing land for both. So let me leave him here where if I leave, there's enough grazing land for him and I'll go off to live in a place which is more suited for Sodom, more suited for my work in the field. I mean, that's where he was before. Obviously, he had a certain bent to be in the land of Seir, stay Edom, and yeah. No, that's not enough. And Taka. Chapter 4, paragraph 4 in the Sikha, the Rebbe says, obviously Rashi can't stop there because you're going to say, well, yeah, all of a sudden Esav is a man of yosher v'tzedek, of uprightness, of justice. He's trying to make the pragmatic, correct, moral, and gentlemanly approach. That's not him. Yaakov moved back to my place, my territory. Why is he deferring to Yaakov? Because it makes sense, because it's the more logical thing. That's not Esav. So, also, we can't understand, why does it say he moved before Yaakov and it says his brother? There has to be a reason why he says his brother. Why is he calling him his brother? What's the emphasis here in the pasuk about his brother? So Rashi says that there's a Medrash Agada that explains why, which would help us understand why Esav was the one that left. Because two things, there was a debt to be paid if you lived in Canaan. Ah, And now we understand why Esav left Yaakov, because there's two brothers here. Esav was thinking, if I stay here, I'm going to be part of that exile. I don't want it. I don't want the land. I don't want the exile. Somebody has to move. We can't both stay here. So once somebody has to move, you know what? I already have a preference to get out of this land because I don't want to be part of the exile, that the price you pay for it. So now we understand that this medrash isn't in dissonance with what we had said, that the grazing land wasn't able to hold them both. Now the medrash comes and says something else. No, he left because of, he didn't want to be part of the deal where you have to go to exile. No. The fact that the land couldn't hold them, that explains why there had to be a split, why one of them had to move. Now, why Esav moved, also we understand Yaakov wants to, the issue of the grazing land, Yaakov is a man of grazing, so he can stay put right here. Somebody has to move, though. Why still is Esav moving? There's not enough grazing land, yet Yaakov go find other grazing land. No, because Esav, anyway, the Medrash says that there's another issue going on here, that Esav, if somebody has to move, Esav anyway has some intention to move. He doesn't want to be part of the shtar, part of the debt that needs to be paid for being in Israel. Right? Now, we understand why Rashi, when he brings this Medrash, he quotes again from the pasuk, the previous pasuk, Bnei Yaakov Achim, that he left because of Yaakov, his brother, because this explains not why one had to move. That's because there wasn't enough grazing land. But why he moved before Yaakov, his brother, and Yaakov didn't move. We say he moved, the Medrash explains why he moved, because of the debt and because of the busha. Now, this also explains why the word achiv, the brotherhood, is re-emphasized here. In the beginning of the parsha, says the Rebbe in a footnote, at the beginning of the parsha where it says he sent malachim to Esav, to his brother. So there it's different, because there that's part of the narrative there. The angels came back and said, you think he's your brother, he's really Esav. Okay, but now for here, why does he have to say he left because of Yaakov, his brother? What's this word brother emphasizing? When we have the Medrash, we understand. Because they're two brothers, and this concept of getting the land and paying for the land is on the seed, is on the children of Yitzchak. So now, because Yaakov, his brother, in other words, there's a shtar chayv. They're two brothers, and they have this debt that has to be paid of exile. So now he says, you know what, hey, I don't want to be part of this. This aspect of the brotherhood where we have a claim to the land, but it also comes with a price. I'm removing myself from this aspect of our brotherhood. According to this, we can understand why Esav didn't leave earlier. Right? Why did he wait till Yaakov came? So the thing is that in the pasuk it says openly that the reason, and the pasuk says openly, the reason that forced them to leave was because there wasn't enough space. Why wouldn't he have left earlier? So the Rebbe explains like this. Till Yaakov came back and there wasn't enough space, it wasn't yet clearly identifiable that whoever was living in Canaan was establishing their independent dwelling there. In other words, they were still kids kind of living at home. In a sense, I mean, they were already grown up, obviously, but they had estates and they had families and so on. But still, this was just a pure continuation of growing up in the land of Yitzchak. No, it was their default state. Esav just didn't move. He went to Seir to work, but he didn't move his place of residence. Now, when one of them has to move, so now whoever stays is going to be making a statement that this is where they've chosen to stay. And if this is where they've chosen to stay, we know that staying in the land of Canaan, as the Medrash says, brings with it a price to pay. And he didn't want to pay the price. However, that's not enough yet of a reason, the fact that he didn't want to pay the price of exile, because nonetheless, this is still showing you're the weaker one. You're still showing subjugation before Yaakov. Yaakov comes, and all of a sudden, you're moving. Esau's moving. That doesn't fit the persona. It's not good for his profile. You moved because of your brother? Hey, you're the strong man. You're the tough guy. So therefore Rashi adds, and he doesn't say, it's not a second interpretation from the Medrash. This is a further explanation in that same Midrashic path Rashi is taking to explain why Esav left. He's explaining it's not just because of the shtar chay, because of the price you pay for Israel. That itself perhaps would be too weak for to have Esav leave his reputation at stake and move, so to speak, and show a subjugation. So he's a weakling before Yaakov. So comes Rashi and brings the further aspect from the Medrash, which is that he also left as there's an aspect of humiliation here that Esav feels when he's in the presence of Yaakov in their ancestral land. And that is that he sold the Bechira, he sold his firstbornness. When Yaakov comes, and he's the one who sold the firstbornness to him, he moves. He moves. He doesn't want to be there. Because it reminds him, it's a constant reminder of the bad deal he'd done. But that's not enough of a reason. That can't be brought as the first reason, because that's not enough of a reason why he would have picked up and moved. So therefore, we have, it's only the additional reason. The main reason is he knew there's a price to pay. You get the land, but then you get also hundreds of years of exile. He didn't want that. So now we have there's an interesting just 1 second, I'm going to check here in the thing. This is also, the Rebbe says now in footnote 25, according to this philosophy, understand where Rashi doesn't say, like some other interpretations say, that Esav had to leave because legally he had sold the firstbornness, and therefore the one who was going to inherit the land was only Yaakov. Rashi doesn't say that because the Pasuk says that why Esav moved is nothing to do with legality, not because he had sold the land. The reason he moved is because there wasn't enough space. So, if you say it's had to do with the legality of inheritance, that Esav had sold all his rights to the land, so why would the Pasuk come and say that there's a problem of being able to, of the land being able to support both of them, their cattle and their grazing land? What's that got to do with it? Legally, he has to leave. However, the reasons Rashi brings, there weren't reasons why Esav had to have left earlier. In other words, Esav wouldn't have left, as we said, because he was still continuing his living where Yitzchak was. He wouldn't have left. The matter came the matter was forced once not both of them could stay there. Now there's a statement that needs to be made, and now Esav decides to ship out and move to Eretz Edom. There's a fascinating star within the footnote that Rebbe brings in Abar Benel that says that Esav, because of his love for Yaakov, he decided to leave him the land of Canaan, the choice land of Canaan. And he said he knows that Esav, that Yaakov really wants it and desires Canaan, and he's going to be the one that inherits it in the end. So he was a gentleman, Esav, and he left and he went away, left Yaakov stay in Canaan. In that narrative, according to the Bar Benel, Esav, so to speak, subdues himself for Yaakov, and he's in from a place of correctness, he leaves it to Yaakov. Rashi says that the Rebbe says Rashi doesn't obviously learn like that, because when Rashi speaks about the encounter of Yaakov and Esav, he brings two interpretations. One is that when Esav kissed Yaakov, either it was just to try and see if he had any jewels in his mouth, or he really kissed him with all his heart, but it was just temporarily. So in the way Rashi teaches us the story of Yaakov and Esav, in the end, Esav still remains at odds with Yaakov, and therefore it doesn't fit that he would leave the land of Canaan, leave it to Yaakov, for his love of Yaakov. So Rashi gives these reasons. Let's just to sum it up. The Pasuk seems to be saying a simple thing, that the Esav left the land of Canaan, went to Seir, because the land wasn't able to hold them. Rashi came in with a simple thing and says there wasn't enough grazing land. We asked, why do we have to understand, what's the big deal there? We know what cattle is, we know what grazing land is. And then I've explained, no, because the Pasuk is answering a question. Why? We know that that there wasn't enough space for both of them. That the Pusik says. Rashi doesn't have to say anything on that. What Rashi's coming to address is, why would Esav have left? Ah, so we're saying because the issue was grazing land. Grazing land was Yaakov's main forte. So that explains to us that if Yaakov's needs can be met here in the grazing, but just there's not enough for Esav as well, so Esav is the one that picks up and moves. Well, why would Esav move? Esav's not a gentleman. He would still, even if it makes more sense for Yaakov to be here, why would he go with that? So he said, because there's something else here. Rashi brought in the Medrash, which we need in order to understand why Esav did the gentlemanly thing. It wasn't such a gentleman, because there was a price to pay that he didn't want to be part of, the hundreds of years of exile. And if that's not enough, Rashi brings, there's also humiliation. The humiliation of him having sold the birthright, so he doesn't want to be in proximity of Yaakov, and he moves himself to Eretz Seir. Interesting, we already had quoted from the Ramban that why he chose Seir is because it's a different land, but it's also not so far from Yitzchak, which is an interesting thing that Rebbe alluded to in the footnote with the Ramban. Okay, now we're going to go to another thing that requires chapter 7, Sif Zayin. We still have to understand, what's the gzeira that Esav was running away from? Esav was running away from what it says, that your children, Avraham was told, your children will be ger, will be temporary dwellers, they'll be strangers. And that had to come to the children of Yitzchak, right? They're going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs. It didn't have to be Egypt. The pasuk, Avraham wasn't told it's going to be Egypt. He was told it's going to be in a land that's not Canaan, a land that's not theirs from the birthright that's given through Avraham, that of the land of Israel. So one second, when Esav moves to Har Seir, he's trying to avoid being a stranger in a foreign land, but then he moves outside the land of Israel. So he's anyway done it. So you're running away from not being part of paying that debt of hundreds of years of exile, but then you go and exile yourself? That's what you're running away from. The explanation is, look at the language of the gzeira, of the decree that was decreed on the children of Yitzchak. The gzeira was, they're going to be a ger, they're going to be temporary dwellers, they're going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs. In other words, wherever they're living, they're going to be like a temporary dweller, ger, a stranger. Not like a permanent resident. Esav didn't want to have a life like that, where he's sitting as a temporary resident. He wanted Vayoshev, as it says, Esav settled in the land of Seir. He said, this is my place. Ah. So that's not being in exile. It's in another land, but it's not exile. Which tells us, what does that tell us? That wherever we are, and it's not that Mashiach has come and we're all in Israel in a settled way in our land. Wherever we are, we're like a ger, we're like a settler, we're like a temporary person, says the Rebbe. From here we have a lesson in our service to Hashem. Wherever we may be, at all the time of exile. The time of exile is what makes us be ger be'eretz le'ilahem, a stranger in a land that's not theirs. In other words, so long as we're still paying that debt, so long as we haven't fulfilled finished the time frame of Golos, of exile, in other words, till Mashiach comes, Mashiach will fight the battles of Hashem and be successful and build the Beis HaMikdash in his place, and afterwards gather the ingatherings of Israel. In other words, in that order, when all the Jews come back to Israel after the Mashiach has come and the Beis HaMikdash has been built, then that's the end of Golos. Then a person has to know, till then, that's when we'll be settled in our land. You can be in our land now, in the land of Israel, right? It's our land. But till Mashiach comes, it's not considered settled in a permanent way. Right? And until then, we have to know that we always have to feel that the reality of our being is that we are a ger, we're temporary dwellers in a land that's not yet ours. If we're living outside Israel, it's a land that isn't ours. If we're living in Israel, it's not yet in a revealed way, a land of our permanence. So wherever we are in the time of exile, in the place of exile, we have to make sure not to get settled, but to feel the fact that we're a ger and that we're strangers to the whole aspect of the exile. It's not us. It's not our permanent place. We're not like an Esav who can go and settle in another land and that becomes him. No. We are, where is our permanent dwelling? Our place of permanence is in all matters of Torah mitzvahs. And things of neshama, things of Torah mitzvahs, in the first place never go to exile. and we should rate at all, every moment and at every second for the coming of the ultimate redemption, the true redemption through Mashiach Tzidkenu will take us upright to our land of Israel, Bekarev Mamish. And the Rebbe quoted here in the footnote from the statement that the previous Rebbe made when he was on this train station of when he left prison and he was at the station, he was about to go to Kastrama and the train station to go to the exile of Kastrama where he was supposed to be exiled for 3 years. Later that was, he was released from there about 10 days later, but he said famously that our souls are never in Golos. Only our bodies can be taken into exile. In other words, that whenever it comes to matters of soul, to matters of Torah mitzvahs, that we have a sense of permanence about. That's permanent. Whereas when we talk about wherever we live in the land of exile, all of that is in a way of ger, in a way of temporary dwelling. When Mashiach come, b'mheira b'yameinu amen.